Roy Milner, Reel 9.
There was a little booklet that it was probably about 3 pages, I seem to recall. I don't know whether I bought it, whether I picked it up, or whether it was issued before I got there, which said something about them. And I think I read it somewhere that for this reason, most of the native regiments are made up of the two factions, the two main factions, Hindus and Mohammedans. So that if the Hindus have got religious festivals on when they don't work and that sort of thing, the work of the regiment can be done by the other half, who don't have festivals at that time, and vice versa at a later stage, you see. So we were aware of that, and we were aware of the caste system, because all our wallahs were the unclean. You know, these were the unclean, and we used to call them this. We used to say, "You unclean boys," but they didn't bother. They didn't bother much about it. I think that they knew they were casteless, or they were termed casteless. They didn't care very much. Their livelihood was the British soldier, and as long as the British soldier was there, they had a livelihood. The fact that the British soldier used to rook them, I don't think that worried them unduly, because supposing the Charwala was owed by, or a number of people in HQ, let's say he was owed up to 100 rupees, and they all said, "We're not paying." When he went back to his contractor, and his contractor said, "Now then, from you, 300 rupees," and he produces only two. And the chap says, "Well, where's the other 100?" He says, "Well, they're all bucket wallahs, they not pay me," sort of thing. And the bloke said, "Right, you're for the clink." And he would go away to clink. And the contractor has to pay for him to be in clink, pays his board while he's in clink. When he comes out, apparently this is so, his debts are cleared. So he comes back to his old job. Now he's owed 100 rupees. If he collects 15 of that, he's quite happy. He'll let you have a book again. So it was a comedy, really. Many of the things we used to laugh about. But while he was away, his chico, his son, would step in and do his job. And we used to say to the chico, "Where's old Gammy then?" "Oh, he gone Bombay to see his father." And we used to say, "Get out, you lying sod. He's in clink, isn't he?" We knew. He was in jail. All right, a month in jail. When he comes out, debt's free. And we used to say, "How much do I owe you, Gammy?" And he'd say, "Oh, 8 rupees, Sab." "I don't think it's that much." "Okay, Sab, you give me what you think, you see." So you're flush and you say, "I think it's 3 rupees." "Acha, Sab. You know, Mehribani, thank you very much." But he's good in his pocket. Never mind the month in jail he's done, he's been fed in there, he doesn't care.
Did you ever actually know what you ought to be paying for things and what things were worth?
No, we took, you know, they said it's 4 annas. We thought by and large, well, that's what it is, 4 annas. I mean, fourpence for a mango. Out there was, I remember them saying at the time that they sent mangoes to England by air when George V was ill, and that if you wanted to buy a mango in England, it would cost you 10 shillings. Well, fourpence to 10 shillings was a hell of a jump. It was to think, well, so all right, a mango's fourpence, but it's delicious fruit. I daren't have one here.
Well, they cost about 10 shillings now.
I know they do. I daren't have one, in case I keep at them. In case I can't leave them alone. So I don't have them. But I say to the wife, "Oh, they're delicious, they are. I love them." No, other than that, I don't think. I wouldn't have missed it. I only wish I could. If I did my time all over again, knowing what I know, I'm sure I'd keep notes and write a book. But it would have to be the humorous side all the time. I would see all the funny things about India. From the word, when I first saw my name appear on orders, draft for India. Ooh, I could have cried, honestly I could. I could have cried. In fact, I probably did shed a tear the last time I saw my bird and was coming, you know, back to barracks this night, and I was going away by train tomorrow morning. And I remember kicking a pile of sand, sod, sending me to India. Once I landed, well, not one of them, once I got to the regiment and had been there a month, I thought, this is a great life, this is good. Mind you, one still regretted coming out there, but I think that died off after a while when one said, what does everybody worry about India for? It's a grand life. More opportunities for swimming in India than I ever had in England. And I was stationed at a place like Dover, right on the coast. So, as I say, I enjoyed it. I think most people did. I can't think that there is. Did we talk about earthquakes at all? Because I've been in several earthquakes. Not massive things, but we talked about this laying of that foundation stone and the steelwork going up and the earthquake crumbling it all down.
Yes.
So in Llandicotal. And this is where they all took place, up on that frontier. And I think that if I say I've experienced earthquakes, that's all I can say. I was once in Peshawar. Yes, I was once in Peshawar. The dance band had been playing the night before. And we were due to go back up the Khyber Pass by our own bus. We had our own bus, which was known as the Green Linnet. And we decided that we'd go back after lunch. But before that, there was an earthquake. And the cinemas out there, in Peshawar anyway, showed native films in the mornings or early afternoons. And in the evening, showed English films. Two different congregations went. And it was while there was a native film on that this earthquake came on. It must have been terrible in the cinema, I think, because they jumped out of windows and all sorts of places. But none of the quakes that I recall being mixed up in or experiencing in Llandicotal did any individual in the regiment any damage. All right, a few corners of buildings and that sort of thing, and this new building, which was crumpled like nobody's business. Other than that, there were rumblings, and you could actually see rocks coming down the hills, but there was no damage. There were no cracks in the ground, which everybody was always looking for, you know. What happens if a crack comes? I'll jump the other side, I'll do this, I'll do this. We talked, but it was fairly jokey at the same time. They thought, if a crack comes, providing I'm not standing on the crack, I'll leap to one side, sort of thing. But other than that, no.
Had you been told what to expect and what to do if something did happen?
No, because I don't think anybody in the regiment up to that time was aware, without the subject being brought up, that we were actually in an earthquake zone, as it were. I never gave the thought. Quetta, there'd been an earthquake at Quetta a couple of years earlier, fairly serious one, but I think all that had been forgotten, and the native quarter suffered, but nobody else, and we never, first time it happened, I don't think anybody knew what it was, till somebody, brighter than the rest of us, said, earthquake! So we just got out of the bungalows, that was all we did, got away from the buildings. They're only single story, you see, all the buildings are single story. That's the thing about barracks. Never double-story barracks out there, all single-story, and we just got away. So that if the building came over, we were far enough away for it to miss us. Other than that, no, nothing. So just put it down to one of those things I've experienced, earthquakes. And a good life was had by all.
And what about the monsoons?
Ah, lovely monsoons, lovely monsoons. I told you about prickly heat, didn't I? We used to shave our hair or have it all shaved off. Prickly heat. Well, when the monsoons came, we used to put, inevitably, these football shorts on and just walk around in it. Lovely. It was good for prickly heat. Nothing on bar these football shorts and just wander around in it and get lovely and wet and then go in and dry.
Well, that's all very well at the first day of the monsoon, but then when it goes on day after day, does it lose its charm?
I think one gets used to it. You don't have seas of mud, you know, just because there's a monsoon. It's gone. And we have things called monsoon drains, which are just ditches which are dug, and it gets into here and flows. And you suddenly find that these monsoon drains are full of frogs. You've never seen a frog, but here are hundreds of them, all in the monsoon drains. And, no, I don't think it pulls. You know, we look forward to the monsoons, and we know that they'll be over within a certain time. And you can still walk about. Sun's brilliant, while the rain's pouring down, but there's a brilliant sun up there. Lots of steam comes up, this sort of thing. But no, I don't think they get boring. I think people thoroughly enjoyed them. We did. We used to go out and get a wash down. Good shower. And then, of course, inevitably was the sun. It was still there during the monsoons. So I think this is, you know, it wasn't cold. Like here, it's wet and miserable. Not there. See, it was just wet. Wet and warm.
Did you have water restrictions during the dry season?
Not that I was aware of. We showered and this sort of thing. No, I don't think there's any shortage of water. Not that I can recall. No. Never restricted. I think it, perhaps by the time I went there, you know, all this had been taken care of and they'd sort of got up to date, and water, we didn't waste it, but could have a shower any time of the day or night, comes to that. And there were always lots of showers. I mean, not as if they gave you about two. But most companies had their own little shower bay, and there might be perhaps a dozen showers there on either side of a, you know, two showers and a wall through there and 12 down there and 12 down there. So it's up to 20-odd people could be showering at any one time.
When did you realise that the British were going to leave India?
Well, I was after the war, when I was home here. I thought it was a terrible thing, too. Not that the British were going to leave India, but that they were giving India away. And I remember saying at the time, call, there'll be bloodshed. I wasn't married. There'll be bloodshed. And my sister said, why? And I said, they hate each other out there. And I said, we're out there to keep them apart. And I said, they'll kill each other off. And they did. I mean, they went hammer and tongs at each other. Most of my views of the native population in India, and not only India, but other countries as well, where at one time or another we have colonized, is that we treat them too leniently. I remember saying that when they were going to get self-determination, I said at the time, well, what they should do is all those people who got British passports, they should say they won't be renewed. And now you want self-determination, you have it, and let's leave them alone. Let them get on with it. And the Russian bogey, which everybody always tossed up, I said, no. I mean, they won't be able to keep it up if we get out of all these places. I had a political sort of motive for saying many things. I didn't like the Labour Party. I hope it's not Labour. And I put it down to the fact that they were giving the empire away. And I didn't think it was a good thing. I still don't think it was a good thing. But I think that if you do have to give it away, give it self-determination, then you should just get out and leave them to it.